Yeah. I've never seen so many merces on people. It is kind of hilarious in East Texas.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 598 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller and Mr. Foz Mamoon. Gentlemen.
Howdy. Good day.
Are you staying cool in the Northeast?
Yeah, it's good out here today.
Yeah, it's nice. Mild. 80s.
It was 113 in East Texas the other day. So that was fun. South America takes its first step towards a single market. What is this about?
So there was a conference slash whatever political get together a week or so ago, and the several of the countries within South America signed on to the beginnings of an agreement that would essentially have South American airlines be able to operate similar to how European airlines operate, which is full access for any airline from any of the member countries to operate in any of the other countries that are signatories to the contract.
Meaning, if you're a Brazilian airline, you could operate in Colombia to the United States if you wanted to.
And more to the point, you can operate a domestic flight within Colombia.
Oh, okay.
Truly open market. So there's a couple places in the world that have this. Europe is the most probably well-developed, I'd say, and the effects of it are well-seen because there's so many airlines and so many countries involved. I believe Australia, New Zealand has a similar setup. Right, so an Australian airline can operate nonstops within New Zealand and vice versa. But those are, while large, still relatively small markets. There's also some of this sort of already exists, I thought. I had thought that between Argentina and Chile, there was some overlap already. Right. But this would be significant expansion. Now, all of that said, it is very much, you know, the beginning of a memorandum of understanding, and it's right now just Argentina, Brazil, Chile, and Paraguay. But they are moving in the direction of expanding those operating rights. Uruguay is also expected to join. We'll have to see which bits sort of increase. But and the notes I'm reading here say Brazil also signed separate memoranda with Argentina and Paraguay, updating bilateral air service agreements to incorporate seventh freedom traffic rights, which I forget which is which. But if you Google freedoms of the air, the Wikipedia article about it is great and would tell us that seventh freedom, the right to fly between two foreign countries when the flights do not touch one's own country. So if this is in place, an Argentinian airline could fly between Brazil and Paraguay, or Paraguayan airline could fly between Brazil and Argentina with this new bit in place.
In Europe, though, like, what's the examples? It's the ultra low cost carriers, right? Mostly that take advantage of this. It's not like you don't see Lufthansa operating flights wholly within Czechia. It's just a lot of things. Yeah,
correct. But Ryanair, as a Irish airline, is the largest domestic operator in Italy.
Yeah. So do you think something like this opens up or happens in South America? Is that your view of this? Is we get a Ryanair or a EasyJet?
Well, I mean, one might argue that there are airlines that are trying to be those anyways. It's just that they're stuck in specific individual markets and some transborder stuff. This definitely opens up more opportunity. But, every now and then the topic comes up in the United States and people are like, we should allow foreign ownership of airlines operating in the United States. And it's sort of, that's what this is about, right? Is who owns the airline and how it operates. And everybody's like, it would be gorgeous. It would be amazing to have like Qantas and Singapore Airlines competing on our New York to LA transcons. I mean, okay, sure, fine. But also, like, they're not going to fly to Des Moines.
But will they fly to Baton Rouge?
Well, only nonstop to Dubai, Foz. You know that.
Baton Rouge. It's a cool idea. I think it's good for South American travel costs over time. I think it's a good thing, right?
Is it that so that's sort of where I was going with my point there about like the New York LA transcon and whatever. Is it, does it actually create more competition in markets where competition is needed, or does it create more competition and lower prices in markets where competition is already healthy because demand is healthy and other markets collapse as a result?
You could ask Norse or, you know, one of those airlines, Norwegian, how that went for them.
Right. So, but I think it's interesting. I think in areas where the capital isn't necessarily present or showing up to do this sort of stuff, it can be helpful, but I am not suddenly expecting, like, what's it, Smart Sky or not? No, that's something else. There's JetSmart.
Yeah.
Is one of the random low cost, ultra low cost carriers down there to like suddenly rapidly expand services. But yes, to your point, Norwegian did try a Norwegian Argentina operation when that country liberalized some of its rules and let them operate down there. It did not go well. Although part of that has to do with, I think, the rules kept changing on what they could and couldn't do. And
I would even say, like, Norwegian's failed attempts, even in markets in the United States, I think it's a good counterpoint to, or I guess it's a good piece, like, to what you're saying.
Like the Boston BWI and Newark, or JFK to Martinique and Pointe-Bitre. Yeah.
Like places where there is actual demand, and they still could
there though.
I don't know. They thought so.
Right. I mean, my favorite bit on that is talking with Marty St. George, who's now president at JetBlue. And he's like, you know, when those routes came up at one point, he said, like, we looked at the numbers on those routes. Good luck to them. So if JetBlue didn't think there was VFR traffic, leisure traffic going to those markets, I don't know what Norse thought or Norwegian thought they were going to get. But
yeah. Let's talk about Fly Dubai, Bangkok. Fly Dubai is upping the amount of service they're offering to Bangkok from Dubai.
Yeah. So this is interesting. They started service apparently beginning of the month, beginning of July, and are already doubling it. So it's going to go double daily.
Wow.
Fly Dubai serves Don Mueang Airport, whatever the old.
The domestic airport or the
low cost carrier airport. It's the old international airport. It's the smaller one though, right? And then I'm not even going to say the other one because I always get it wrong. But if you read
BKK,
if you read it slowly and pronounce all the syllables, apparently you get it right. neither of those things are my strengths. But Emirates flies five a day on much, much larger planes to the main airport, BKK, and Fly Dubai is showing up flying to DMK on smaller planes. And it's a weird business decision.
Well, probably a combination of, there's a lot of tourism in Bangkok because of White Lotus. And then there's also a lot of labor that comes from Thailand to Dubai.
Which is which?
I would argue that Emirates is probably moving the tourists while the labor is coming on Fly Dubai.
I won't argue that, other than to say I think the tourism was there before White Lotus also.
It was. White Lotus has just driven it up substantially.
Yeah. But I guess Emirates, you know, is the world's largest low-cost carrier, arguably, given their cost structures and the number of economy class seats they fly. At least in economy, they are a low-cost carrier in many ways. And so I always look at that of, like, you know, why do they fly the A380 there? A lot of that is to move migrant workers.
But is it fair to call Emirates a low-cost carrier when they are full service?
What do words mean anymore?
Words don't mean anything. I'm convinced.
I actually don't think the terms mean much of anything either. But like, if you look at it as a low cost carrier is based on their costs are low. Now, is it their costs are low because their employees aren't paid well, or their costs low because they don't have as much service? It's, you know, who the hell knows.
But generally, the term LCC means a no frills airline,
and that is certainly a version of it. But there are some airlines that have gone unbundled that aren't necessarily as low cost, so it's hard to know.
Doesn't Fly Dubai have fly flats now in business?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is Fly Dubai even a low cost carrier? Like, are they an unbundled carrier? Like, there's all none of these terms make sense anymore.
We've just made everything crappier in the back so that you have to pay a little bit more to get the thing that you used to have.
Sure.
Is that a better way to put it? There you go.
I mean, thanks basic business class also though. So like, it's not just the back.
This is true. The thing you used to get for free, you know, I'm gonna have to pay a little bit more to get.
It's only an extra $200, though. Don't worry about it.
Is Fly Dubai and Emirates, are they they're partners, right?
Yes, very tightly linked. Fly Dubai is operating at T3 in Dubai Airport. So, you know, it's not perfectly seamless, but it's very interesting to me that they added the capacity that, you know, to Faz's point, I do think it's probably some split of passenger type. But like there are, I also would expect that it's probably a little bit of like, how can you get more slots at BKK Airport and add capacity there versus the other airport? And I mean, they're not that far apart, but there is levels of convenience to getting to the different airports.
And Emirates is doing like A380s typically into the BKK. So clearly there is some kind of constraint there for them to put a number of A380s at any given time into the same airport. So,
yeah.
Interesting. I wonder too, like how much it has to do with connecting traffic in Dubai. Like if, you know, DMK to Dubai to Saudi Arabia is a certain price point that Fly Dubai can deal with at scale, and Emirates doesn't want to eat that cost and they'd rather push those passengers on to Europe or wherever. Maybe it's something to do with that too.
Well, it could also be catchment area, right?
They're on different sides of town.
Yep. Interesting stuff. Aer Lingus, not going so hot for Aer Lingus, is it?
Well, some significant North America cuts are coming, and some European stuff, but are things not going well, or are they just not going well enough?
Yeah.
And
they're dropping Denver, Minneapolis, Las Vegas, and then Seattle is going seasonal. I'm guessing that means summer seasonal.
Correct. And that all happens, more or less end of this summer, between October and December, those changes all get implemented.
And then Frankfurt, Hamburg,
Malta.
And Malta go seasonal, and Split, Croatia gets dropped.
Yep.
Those are interesting ones to me. Like it comes back to like, what is Aer Lingus trying to do, right? If you're a connecting flow airline, if that's your goal, I would say getting rid of Frankfurt and Hamburg and even Malta, going seasonal is kind of hard to understand. A lot of people going there.
See, I guess I would almost say I can almost understand them going seasonal if your goal is connecting flow, because what you're capturing is connecting flow to and from North America. And business travelers going to Frankfurt are just going to fly to Frankfurt.
Yep.
Right. There's a lot of nonstop lift or connect once on the US side versus, you know, Hamburg's harder. Hamburg, you're connecting no matter what. Malta, you're certainly connecting no matter what. But it's, yeah, if you can't make Frankfurt work as a destination year round, what are we doing here?
Yeah. That's kind of like my thought. And then like the US places that they're going to stop flying. Denver, which has been fairly strong. United had a bunch of flights that they started out of Denver, transatlantic. Some of those are seasonal. Las Vegas is a little surprising just because the amount of traffic that was going there. I mean, this could all be tariff immigration related with not enough Europeans coming. Seattle's also surprising because of the cruise traffic and just the sheer amount of that there is.
That's summer seasonal.
That's summer seasonal. Some of that goes up to Alaska pretty late. So that's a little surprising too, though, with their partnership.
But summer goes to October.
Oh, that's a good point. Good point, Fuzz.
Last Saturday in October is summer season end. So,
I mean, I'm surprised about Frankfurt and Hamburg because you would think there'd be some amount of business travel, all of that.
You'd think.
Yeah. Does anyone else? Someone else must serve Hamburg to Dublin, right?
Probably Eurowings or something, Discover, whatever. Frankfurt is Lufthansa. I mean, it's surprising because the number of U.S. and other tech companies, non-U.S. tech companies in Dublin, there's a lot in Dublin, and I can name five now.
No one serves that route nonstop. Maybe it's just on Tuesdays that I happen to be looking. Ryanair has it some days. Yeah, that's an interesting one. But again, if you're competing, you know, it's once a day, but if you're competing against Ryanair.
Yeah. One of the things you pointed out in the notes is that the subsidy for Denver has expired.
Yes. So
Denver Airport
for a while.
Yeah. Denver Airport gave them some money every year to run that. And that's over now.
But did the same thing happen with Minneapolis and Vegas?
I haven't seen it confirmed.
Yeah. I haven't seen anything either. I know Minneapolis has been there for a long time, right?
I don't think so.
It's a couple of years. Yep. So,
but and Delta flies Minneapolis, Dublin, I think.
Right.
So there's actually competition on that route.
Yeah.
Makes you wonder what's going to happen with like Pittsburgh though, or
Pittsburgh's a 321.
And then you think they have a little bit more slack there to play around.
I suspect, like, Seattle, Vegas, and Denver, I think, have to be wide bodies.
Yeah.
Minneapolis, I'm not sure. But the question that I have is, what are they going to do with the 330s instead?
Yeah.
I don't know. Where would you send them? Dubai? Qatar?
I have no idea. I mean, but they seem to be, like, right, they've backed out of Manchester, which is wide bodies.
Right.
Right, so they're going to are they offloading the wide bodies, or do they have some grand plan to redeploy all these wide bodies that they're recovering?
Yeah, I don't know. That's
And they haven't moved to, like, Neos, or there's no commitment to move to A350s that I've seen. So
no,
maybe they're
keeping their existing fleet.
Yeah.
So for December of this year, currently published wide body destinations from Dublin, Malaga, Boston, Cancun, JFK, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Madrid, Orlando, Miami, O'Hare, and San Francisco.
When was this for?
That's for December, the month of December.
So Vegas is still published for December?
Yeah. Only two flights, though. I think it may end early December.
Okay.
But yes, I mean, putting a wide body into Boston, they do that part-time during the rest of the year, too. But it's going to be, double daily wide bodies.
And you said Malaga?
Yes.
Hey, man, you got to go get your son during that Irish winter.
Right. Malaga's got 8 flights. Madrid's got 7. Orlando.
What do people do? I need to know what people do in Malaga. Like, we had a great time for 3 days. It was great. But other than that, what do you do? Especially when we were in the winter. In the winter.
It was warm-ish.
It was
not warm.
60.
It's warmer than where most of us live.
All right, Irish listeners, what do you do in Malaga in the winter?
I'll DM a guy, one of our listeners. We can see what I can get from you.
Drive to Gibraltar.
Oh, man. And so you think, Seth, that you have a note in here, actually bad or just not good enough? And that's what you kind of hinted at the very beginning. What are you getting at?
I mean, apparently their margins were 11%, and that was considered not good enough, and so that they're killing some of these routes. Now, historical margins versus future predictions, et cetera, right? Like, fuel prices are definitely going to be higher for the next many months. We don't know how things are going to play out. But it was just, I don't know, what's, as an airline these days, I feel like if you can hit 11% margins, you're actually probably doing pretty good.
Yeah, it seems good to me.
But they were in the back of the pack for the IAG family of airlines. And so, you know, we're going to squeeze more out.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a consumer, that sucks a little bit, but I get it as a business. If they think that the capital expense can be moved elsewhere and the planes can be moved elsewhere and still do good things with them, sure. If they're not, then what are we doing?
Clearly, Malaga in the winter.
We get a double S service.
JetBlue grabbed Spirit's LaGuardia slots.
Yay.
And they get some debt coming.
And they also get the marine terminal out of it, right?
I received a polite correction in some of my reporting from JetBlue's comms team. The rest of the world is still reporting what I originally reported, so who the hell knows what's actually happening. But the official statement from JetBlue is they have expressed interest in returning to the Marine Air Terminal. Not that it's a done deal. Also, JetBlue expects that their rent would go down if they move to the Marine Air Terminal.
I could see that. It's not a renovated facility.
Yeah. You guys may remember there was a lot of debate about that in the San Antonio terminal thing of who was paying how much for renovated versus not renovated gates and things like that.
Yes. So,
this is an opposite, though, right? There's an airline that wants to move to the cheaper section.
Correct.
it's 5 gates. Is it 5 gates at the Marine Air Terminal? Is it 4?
5 or 6, which, like, I keep thinking about it, and this JetBlue has, like, I want to say a dozen flights today and would add another dozen, or has 15 today and would add another dozen, roughly. They end up somewhere between 20 and 30 total flights. And so, like, 5 gates can handle that. Spirit used those gates and turned them around with very high capacity airplanes. So it's doable. And I admit I haven't been in the Marine Air Terminal probably in at least a decade, but I used to fly, like, Delta Shuttle out of there all the time. It was kind of a dump. And it just had no, like, it has a large, like, central space with some chairs in it and some gates.
But it was like the old LaGuardia. Like, you rolled up right before your flight, you got on your plane, and you left. The intent.
Foz is going to become a JetBlue flyer.
Like, that would require me to go to LaGuardia.
No, yes, you don't have to spend that much time there until, you know, someone sneezes near Newark and weather says everything's delayed 3 hours and you're stuck there. Also, just like, are there even enough seats? And if Spirit made it work, I'm sure JetBlue can, because Spirit had more people in all of its planes, but it's still, it just seems crazy to me.
I mean, Spirit doesn't care if you sit or stand, right? So yeah. That's probably, it's a good question to ask. So, I mean, JetBlue's statement, though, to you is...
They want to. They want to move to the Marine Air Terminal. They want to cut their rent at LaGuardia. They want to boost their number of flights and, you know, who knows where, but we'll see.
Yeah, interesting. All right. And then Emirates is saying no to the first few 777Xs. Rumors that United might sweep in? What's the story here?
So Emirates has basically said the first couple triple X's, because of the amount of rework they need, they've lost half their lifespan. That's what they claim. So they will not accept delivery of them. And so now there's rumblings that United is contemplating jumping in and picking them up at a cheap price, just like they did with the 77Ws.
Hmm. Do you actually see this happening? I thought Lufthansa was going to get a couple of the first ones.
So it's the terrible teams problem. And this happens. Boeing had this problem with their 787s also. The, you know, sequence numbering, whatever. But like the first handful are test aircraft that, you know, don't ever actually get delivered to an airline. And then everything through, you know, the teens in terms of production are being built before they know that they're actually ready to go based on what they hope will be acceptable. But as happened in the 787, as now is happening here, they're finding work that needs to be done to make them FAA compliant. And they're heavier. The 787s were heavier. Like, I want to say a couple of them sat at Boeing for like 6 or 8 years before someone finally bought them cheap. Mm. But, you know, if you don't want a subfleet, and you especially don't want a subfleet that looks and, you know, walks and quacks just like the other one, but actually is different inside. And by inside, I mean like inside the walls of the fuselage, not just the interiors.
Yeah, this is after they already just scrapped one of the 777Xs. So the first one's already been scrapped as well.
But I did not realize that.
Yeah, so I'm curious, like if United does end up picking up 777Xs, is that the final death nail in their A350 order?
It's a lot of airplane, though.
But it's the replacement for the 350.
Yeah.
Right? They have tons of 787s on order, 9s and 10s. So that's the replacement for the bulk of the 777s between that and the 76s. So the 777 would just fill the void of where the 77Ws are and some of the 777-200s, because those are a problem with the Pratt & Whitney engines.
Oh, what you're saying is the triples, the 77-9s, for example, replace the 76s?
I think that's what we're going to see.
That's a lot of capacity to add, especially premium.
Unless they use the 8s to fill the triple the 763s. There's no other options for the 763s.
Yeah.
330, but it's still too much capacity. I don't think, I don't see United taking any more 8s. The trip cost isn't sufficiently lower than the dash nines to justify it.
I think we'll see 789s with larger Polaris and premium economy cabins.
Yeah.
To fill the void of the 763s.
Mm. Running routes like Chicago, Zurich, and things like that have done with the 763 historically.
Okay. Because to Europe, remember, it's revenue shared, so their financial risk is less.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could see United taking some old planes. I mean, but I guess what's the lifespan of the 777X if it's, you know, gone through these cycles? Like, is it 10 years off its life? Is it 5 years off its life? Like, what's the, do we know? We probably don't know yet.
No.
I think it's less about, and I mean, I appreciate the statement that it's lifespan, but I think it really is more about it's an airplane that's been rebuilt. It's not a new airplane.
Mm. That's what Emirates cares about.
And understandably, you want a plane that was actually like built to fly the way it's configured, not something cobbled together out of spare parts.
Yeah. 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 All right. Midway, the island, Henderson Airfield, may lose its ETOPS rating as a diversionary airport, right?
Yeah. So the FAA issued a request for comments last week. about this. And the gist of it is they spend about $5 million a year making sure that airport's available. And it's used as a diversion point rarely, but when it happens, it's needed. And it's used rarely in terms of someone landing there, but it's used all the time in terms of airlines filing it or filing flight plans and using it as one of the available diversion points. And if it goes away, is that a problem? And I noticed this in the filings. I put it out on the internet. I sort of mapped where the ETOPS ranges are and things like that. And at first blush, almost everything flying across the Pacific is ETOPS 180, which is 180 minute. It's certified to operate 180 minutes on a single engine at lower altitude if case an engine fails. So if you look at the other airports across the Pacific, Honolulu, Guam, Majuro, one of the ones at the end of, in the Aleutians in Alaska, and you put a circle of about 1,100 miles on each of them or something like that I use, which is about the 3-hour ETOPS range, you can actually overlay all the circles and cover everything, including Midway. So in theory, Midway is not needed. In reality, however, it very much is.
Well, but I think your analysis is a little wrong. Like taking Majuro out, like Majuro's, how long is the runway at Majuro?
Long enough.
8,000 feet?
Yeah, it can handle any of these diversions.
Okay. So Majuro is an option. Honolulu is an option. Johnson Atoll is not an option anymore.
No.
You can use Attic, which is the one you're talking about in the Aleutians. But the middle of the Pacific, the reason Midway is so important is because it's basically in the middle of the Pacific.
And, you know, so it was one of those things. I was like, I don't know. Do you need it? Do you need it? Do you need it? And a buddy of ours who's a dispatcher comment was, no, losing this would be an absolute disaster. So.
Well, it would limit the number of routes, right? You'd either have to go north or south.
Yeah. Which would be way less efficient for operations because in many cases you're taking the jet stream eastbound across the Pacific and benefiting from that. I didn't mention the last number. I said they're spending like $5 million a year to keep it up. The reason this came up is because it's up for a major surface refresh and it's a $100 million project. And so is it worth spending $100 million of government money to keep plus the $5 million a year, you know, sort of in perpetuity to make sure that the commercial trans-Pacific aerospace industry remains able to operate with twin engine services at the level it does.
I guess, how long does $100 million buy you? 10 years, 20 years?
Sure.
I mean, if it's 20 years, then your real cost is $10 million a year. If it's 10 years, it's $15
million. Yeah.
I think it's still good. You're going to get the runway resurfaced regardless, right? Unless they get rid of
the... No, I think that's the point, is they're saying if they don't need it for ETOPS, they might just let it die.
So what are they going to do with all the workers and contractors who live there?
They might have a gravel runway then.
Yeah. On what plane are you going to put there?
Some 732s are available, last I heard.
Gravel, I mean, it's...
Or you take a boat. But like, if you have a light plane, you don't need to do as much the runway versus a heavy plane.
Yeah. Also, like, what else is out there that doesn't need to stay an inhabited space?
I mean, I know there's a big wildlife refuge there. That's part of it. It's like government contractors live there to help with the wildlife refuge. I mean, Hawaii's not close. And the other close things aren't really inhabited either. So, I don't know. At this point,
there's a decent chance Japan's not going to try and invade again if we abandon it, right?
We won that battle, by the way.
Too soon? It's been 80 years. What up?
Let's see. I just want to see, like, what does... Because, like, Narita LAX probably goes a little bit further north.
But Narita Houston, remember? That's the flight that diverted there, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah, I was trying to see. And you said 180 is the number?
Yeah.
I mean, you can do without Midway, you can do like Taipei to LAX. It might hurt some of the routes like Narita to Mexico City.
What about Singapore?
I'm guessing. Let's see. Singapore to LAX or Singapore to San Francisco?
Either one.
So again, there's also like, are you looking at actual flown paths or are you looking at just Great Circle Mapper?
I'm looking at Great Circle Mapper and flown paths.
Right. Because this is the Great Circle Mapper in that part.
It's hard to like exclude Midway.
Right. You can't exclude from that. Calculations. That's like, exactly. I screwed that up in my original post about it. But
yeah, so like Singapore LAX might be at risk because they take a very jet stream specific path typically. Yeah. And they, so they'll hang out further south than is typical. But that takes them over Honolulu or a little north of Honolulu. So I don't know. I think you have to keep the airport. I'm trying to think, what were some of the other diversions recently in the Pacific? Midway was one of them. That was like the smoke in the cabin. But there was another diversion. Maybe it was Attic, where they landed. They had an engine fire or something, and they landed at Attic and had a Delta flight go pick them up.
It happens like once a year. So, yeah, is that enough?
Yeah.
I tend to agree, like, if I thought that, you know, abandoning it would be better for the wildlife refuge and whatever, and it wasn't going to dramatically impact travel and commerce, okay. But, you know, $100 million to support how much international travel and billions of dollars? Like,
yep. I'm with you.
We'll see what happens. I think the comments on this are going to be very interesting.
Will we get to see the airline comments? Because I think that will be what I want to read, is like all the airlines' comments.
Generally speaking, filings to a docket are public.
Okay. And then lastly, Files, you've shared the story. Gatwick lost water in both its terminals?
Yeah, I think it was this morning. Whoever provides the water in the area had a power outage at their treatment plant, so there was no water into Gatwick. So all the restaurants had to close. The restrooms were fun.
That's just kind of those situations where, like, well, you don't have water, I'm just going home.
Well, my buddy who lives in England sent it to me and said, he's like, it's like Old LaGuardia.
No, Old LaGuardia had too much water, all like coming down from the roof.
This is true.
Fair.
All right. Thanks, Foz. For our Patreon supporters, if you stick around, we're going to talk about the Moab and the Essential Air Service and Polaris. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Southwest expansion. Aeroplan's new partner, and Hawaiian goes to 737-800s for their inter-island operations. So stick around for that for Patreon supporters. If not, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.
See you later.